Third time lucky. We are live. Welcome to Rugby League World Cup Radio with Winnie and Clarkie. Really sorry, we've had two false starts already tonight. We had issues with our live streaming. I believe we're live on the Tripod Facebook, Tripod YouTube channel. We couldn't seem to connect to Facebook, so we're going to try and put a couple of links on Facebook, and hopefully, ultimately, if you're watching this, that means you did find us on YouTube. We've had some great rugby league games in the World Cup to talk about, not just last weekend with two epic semi-finals, but the week before as well, if you go back to the third and fourth quarterfinals. So that makes four awesome games of footy after a lot of blowouts in this competition. It has been worthwhile hanging in there, following along, because we've had some brilliant footy and luckily some really good results as well. I did win every bet that I shared last week, and the mixed matchup that we have shared with you guys has won every single week of the World Cup. And I even think I even said, Clarkie, we tipped England in the opening game of the tournament. And even when they won by 60, we refused to write Samoa off. I said they might get revenge in the semi-final. They certainly did. But I should welcome you onto the show, mate. And actually, before we get to that one, it was Australia-New Zealand, the earlier game. So do you want to start us off just talking about the Aussies scraping home?
Yeah, definitely a lot closer than I thought. I can't remember. Do you remember what the line was for that game?
The Aussies are 12.5 point favourites.
Right. And I do remember on the show last week, I said that they'll cover that easily. I made that presumption off the back of New Zealand's performance, where they only just really, you could argue they were quite lucky against Fiji with a key call at the right moment going their way. But one thing I've really learned this World Cup, Winnie, is the form doesn't matter week to week like it does in the NRL. And one thing I also wasn't considering until you really made the point is that 7 days is a long time in rugby league. And so there's so many games this tournament that I've tipped wrong just purely because I've really focused on the form from the previous week. And it just really hasn't mattered. New Zealand struggle against Fiji. Australia breeze past Lebanon. It would indicate, Australia should have a nice victory coming up here. Not the case at all. One thing that has frustrated me this World Cup, Winnie, I don't know if you've seen it as well, is every single closed game, all I see on my Facebook scores and MVP posts is we were robbed and the MVP should be the ref. Have you seen that sort of stuff as well this World Cup?
Yeah. People are always blaming the ref, and even I'm thinking, I can't actually think of any specific, moment where either team was truly robbed.
The only time I've honestly sat there after a game, and I was worked up at the time, was the 2019 grand final with the Raiders and Roosters after the six again call, where I genuinely thought robbed. But I can't think of too many other games where I've honestly sat there and thought robbed. And certainly if you looked at the comments after that game, you would think that New Zealand were just never given a chance by the referee and that it was, a horrible bias towards Australia. Not the case at all. I thought it was a scrappy performance from both teams. And I thought in the end, Australia were, I don't want to say lucky, but it was far from their best. And in the end, they came away with the win, but I really can't think of too many reasons why. My matchup in that game, though, Winnie, how good was it? James Tedesco, 33 runs for 320 meters, breaking out tackles. And then Joey Manu says, well, I'll have 31 runs for 318 meters with four tackle breaks. It was fantastic seeing those Roosters teammates go head-to-head.
I was going to talk about the fact that three Roosters players really shone at fullback this weekend. And that matchup, both fullbacks, over 300 metres. And you'd think it'd be an open, high-scoring affair. The final score was Australia 16 to New Zealand 14. And that was another winner we had. So a few in this game. I had New Zealand plus 6.5 in the first half. Well, they led this game 14-10. So 14-10 halftime wasn't really low-scoring. We wanted this game to be low scoring because our mixed matchup was the first semi-final, Australia-New Zealand, to have less points than England-Samoa. There were only 6 points in the second half. So there were only 30 points total in this match. What's crazy is, that just shows how tight of a battle it was in the second half. But the 6 points that were scored were pretty soft. I mean, it was a tap off a penalty. And in that moment, New Zealand will rue that moment. They'll rue a few moments that I want to talk about quickly in the second half where the game was there to be won. Australia was knocking on the door. They got a penalty, which, did hurt New Zealand because it was going to be another set. But you still, when it's a penalty and a tap, you get a chance to set your line. And I noticed in that very moment, Brandon Smith and Nelson Asofa-Solomona, they were kind of hands on knees. I felt like Brandon Smith was leaning against the goalpost. Sure enough, Cam Murray, straight off the tap, runs straight at him, and it's a bad miss by the pair of them. What else can you say? Because he gets the ball to the ground and puts Australia in front. Australia ultimately holds on to that, but New Zealand had chances to grab that lead back as well. I think about a moment where they put Nicol Klukstad through, and I thought he could almost take Tedesco on, and he may have scored, but he kind of cut back infield, didn't take the risk of being put in a touch. Very next play, they had Australia on the ropes, and that's where Hughes goes early on a first tackle. I think they'd gotten a repeat set, a six again, and Hughes grubbers in behind because it was a chance for a try. It just hits the touchline before it's grounded. And those are the slim margins. And for New Zealand, I guess for a post-mortem on them, like, they got close. They did better than, you know, probably what a lot of people expected. I know people knew that this side was strong, but as you say, 12.5-point underdogs against Australia. Madge said they closed the gap. Do you see it as a successful tournament for New Zealand?
Not particularly, but the reason why I've got that isn't too much to do with their performances. I don't think they were at their best the whole tournament, but what concerned me, Winnie, was the comments from Michael Maguire post-game. I almost felt like he was trying to buy himself extra time in the role. He basically come out and said that for the past however many years, New Zealand haven't been on par with Australia, and now we're right there. We've shown we're right there tonight. I got to disagree with that. I mean, really, since I've been watching football, Australia and New Zealand have been the main two international sides, and New Zealand have always been on par with Australia. Australia have, for the most part, been favourites to beat them, but there's never really been a time where you go, oh, New Zealand are no chance. They've always been on par or similar to Australia. And so those comments from Maguire there, I felt like he was buying himself a little bit more time. What would you say about those comments, though?
Oh, I can't see where he's coming from. I think New Zealand made the final of the World Cup in, it would have been 2013. Yep. And I don't think it was that close. See, they won the World Cup 5 years before that. They've beaten Australia once or twice in that period of time. But most of the time, especially when they used to play mid-year tests, I felt like Australia always had a pretty big advantage and usually would win like that Anzac test pretty comfortably. And obviously New Zealand, you know, we talked about last World Cup being knocked out in the quarterfinals by Fiji. So they got closer. But again, you get later in the competition, depth is the issue. And I thought Australia would ultimately outlast New Zealand in this game. And that's why I liked first half even more so. But they absolutely had a chance to win, as we described. And then let's move to the second game, which was an absolute cracker, maybe the game of the tournament in Samoa, England, where, let me see if I can pull a graphic up of that one. Samoa was victorious in Golden Point, 27-26. So don't worry about the mixed matchup. That one by over 20 points there. That's what you do some quick maths. 53 combined points in this game, despite it being a high-leverage World Cup semi-final. And, well, Clarky, you said it before, what a difference 4 weeks makes.
Yeah, and the biggest thing with this game is in previous World Cups, you know, it's usually New Zealand on the other side of the draw. So for once, we finally got to see a chance at, you know, two other sides to progress to the final. And this game was not what I expected at all. I thought England would pretty comfortably beat Samoa again. I definitely expected it to be an improvement on the first week, but I couldn't tip Samoa. I could not sit here and do it, and I won't pretend like I was really even giving him a chance now. As embarrassing as that might be, again, I've got to say from last week, what's disappointed me the most about Samoa this tournament? They were my dark horses, and I tipped them in week one to beat England. But since that loss, I just lost faith, and I've never been able to refine that faith. And I still ultimately don't even know if I have that faith as they go into the final. But this game in particular, Winnie, it's the final 10 minutes for me. Samoa go ahead. You think, oh, amazing. Then England race the length of the field and score in the 77th minute through Herbie Farnworth. His other try in that game where he just muscled past like six defenders to score was world class. But it was just the last 10 minutes for this game. Absolute carnage. Just unpredictable. Just as you thought England were going to close it out, Samoa score. And then just as you think Samoa with 8 minutes on the clock are going to close it out, England score. We then go to a field goal from Stephen Crichton. That might be the first field goal I've ever seen him kick in his career. What a field goal to kick. But just an exceptional game of football, high class, entertaining, back and forth stuff. A+.
Maybe I was being too kind when I said we didn't write him off. I didn't. I said all the way. In fact, I tipped Samoa +4.5 in this game. +8.5. They were nearly $4 head to head, and +4.5 in the first half. So both of those won as well. And I didn't quite tip them head to head though. I will admit, last week I thought this game was going to be a lot closer than expected, and I thought that England may just edge them with home field. And in the end, like, it was so close, either side could have won it. But all the credit in the world to Samoa, because that is a phenomenal achievement, a country of that size to come over to the other side of the world and beat the hosts. People can say it's, you know, that a lot of the Samoan players play in Australia to try and take away from what they've achieved, or that, you know, rugby league's not the number one sport in England. Doesn't matter, honestly. For Samoa to make their first World Cup final, very few countries ever even have, it was unreal. And, you know, the whole narrative of turning around their whole tournament, obviously, like, who in what sport does any team ever get flogged by 60, you know, the first game and come back and beat that opponent when, you know, when all the chips are down, when it really matters? I will give you a chance to maybe let everyone know if you've changed your opinion of Matt Parrish, because I think, you know, there is a bit of a redemption arc, because the last 2 weeks we didn't necessarily think Samoa was going to beat their opponent, Tonga, and then England, but they have won as an underdog both times. So in this game, Samoa had the lead at halftime, and there was, you mentioned kind of what happened in the final 10 minutes, but maybe the try of the tournament in the first half as well, that try where they just kept the ball alive and, you know, it was final tackle and offloads when they're just a few centimetres off the ground. Ultimately, it finds Crichton. He gets over. And so, as I say, we cash first half bet. Ultimately, that with the outright victory, we cash the full-time line as well. This game had the 2021 grand final flashbacks with a Crichton intercept try at a pivotal moment. It was an NRL player he intercepted as well in Victor Radley. And then I don't know about you, Clarky, this is a deep cut, but I got flashbacks to the 1994 Kangaroos tour where Australia's backs were against the wall in game two and Ricky Stewart threw a dummy on his own 30 to get through and set up a try that levelled that series. That's kind of what England did from well inside their own half in the 77th minute, close to a length of the field try, which also needed a conversion from out wide to tie the game at 26-all. The crowd was in absolute raptures. But if we go back 2 weeks ago, while Samoa was an underdog, what I said was there's three players in the back line that I think would need to star for them to get these wins, and that's Suaalii, Crichton, and Luai. And those three really were the ones who proved themselves to be true superstars of the game, both last week and this week, and leading Samoa to this, to their first ever final.
And to touch on Jerome Luai, Winnie, for me, he was really close to the golden boot. I think if Joseph Manu didn't play that mid-season test against Tonga for New Zealand, where he broke the most ever run meters in a professional game at 420 or whatever it was, I'd have Jerome Luai ahead just based on this tournament. He's been MVP three of their four games. The only one he wasn't MVP was the big England loss. And I think that's why a lot of people sort of downplayed his chances of winning the Golden Boot. But we must remember now, the Golden Boot does not incorporate Origin. It does not incorporate any club games. It's strictly international. And if we're looking at this World Cup, Jerome Luai was right up there for me. And the other one you just said there, all the players you said that had to perform did. And I'm just bringing up the team of the tournament now. Joey Manu at fullback deserved to be there. Brian To'o, Samoan. Tim Lafai, Stephen Crichton. You've got it right there. And so we can just see how many Samoans there are through this lineup. Brian To'o was exceptional this World Cup. He would have averaged close to 300 metres. Tim Lafai came in for Isaac Tungo and did not look out of place. I actually watched him and thought, it's unbelievable. This guy was, when he went to the Super League, I thought we'd never see him close to the NRL again based on his form at that stage. But he was exceptional. Jerome Luai, I've mentioned him. Junior Barlow there at prop. I mean, he led them perfectly. And he's actually the Ironman this year too, when he has played 36 professional games. However, there's one really unfortunate stat that I don't want JP to get, but I think he will. He is going to become the first player to ever lose an NRL Grand Final, an Origin Series decider, and a World Cup final in a single year, which I, for that reason, I really hope Samoa wins so JP doesn't get that. But hey, I'm not trying to be funny. Being in just three of those games anyway is a massive achievement in itself, regardless of the result.
Oh, absolutely. So my thoughts on the Golden Boot, and comment what you guys reckon. Okay, if it doesn't include club footy, I find that kind of crazy. Like, I feel like you should include the club games if you're going to award the best player of the year, because there aren't that many internationals. Like, who got Golden Boot last year? I can't even remember, because were there even any internationals, or do they just not award it because, you know, like COVID's wreaked havoc the last couple of years? Because people will think that's crazy. Luai is trying to think of the word polarizing, I would say. Like, this is a guy who's just led Samoa to their first ever World Cup final, as you say, man of the match multiple times. He's won the last two comps. He's played State of Origin, but yet he's got so many superstar teammates around him, you know, at Clubland. He gets a bit overshadowed, and a lot of people will try and take away. Also, people don't like the grubbiness and the niggle for sure. And if you're ever up against him, he's a guy you love to hate. But people take away from his ability, you know, and try and make him out to be not a good player. Now, I can see the argument. Like, look, if Matt Burton never left the Panthers and Luai left instead, and Luai now played for the Dogs and Burton played for the Panthers, Burton would probably be the one playing 5-8 for New South Wales. You know what I mean? He'd be getting more accolades. Like, there is some truth to the fact that Luai gets to play in a star team and then, you know, likes to rub it in people's faces when they're winning big. And you kind of think, how good would he be on an average, like a mediocre or below average NRL side? But the fact of the matter is, he's still a very talented player and he's proven it. And when you can get results as an underdog, then you're going to have to outshine, you know, more highly regarded players and more deep and more stronger ability sides that you're going up against. And you've got to give credit where credit's due for that. But I can't argue with Manu. I do have one other point about Golden Boot. If it's internationals only, how on earth can you award it before the World Cup final? That's ludicrous to me. What if Luai did lead Samoa to a victory over Australia? Then, you know, surely then you can't deny it. So that's a bit crazy. I want to make a couple other points about Samoa. England, the Taylor May bet that I gave out at the start of the tournament, 15-1. It's probably sunk. Three tries scored by Samoa on the left, one man inside Taylor May. You know why Taylor May didn't score? Because Dom Young was hell-bent on stopping him scoring and came up with air three different occasions because he just did not want to leave the paint and leave Taylor May. And as a result, Tim Lafay just scored running around the centre twice. And I think another occasion, Samoan's second rower went the blind side and scored, not needing to pass to May because Dom Young was just glued to the wing. So maybe a bit of inexperience there. Lafay, you've got to give him credit. He is Samoa's most capped ever player. He was not in their top 17 going into this World Cup. The injury to Tungo opened up an opportunity for him. He now has six tries in this tournament, had a double last week. And a post-mortem for England, you talk about teams or players getting robbed. It's funny, the last three English World Cup campaigns had crazy endings to the semi-final. In 2013, it was Sean Johnson, was final minute, I think, scores a try, knocks England out of the semi-final. In 2017, it was Andrew Fifita, final minute, scores a try to knock England out of the semi-final. But as we know, it was ruled a knock on. So England did scrape through. And in 2022, it's Crichton's left boot that sends England out in golden points. So, you know, if things had been different, they could have had their heart broken three World Cups in a row. I think what England's missing, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but they don't have as many potent backline players. I don't feel like they've got the outside back stars that can change a game, can turn a game, that the other big nations like Australia, New Zealand, Samoa do have.
Three things to follow on, because I've been keeping notes as you've been speaking. Number one, I agree with that, but I would also like to see them versus New Zealand and Australia to see what sort of score line we get there before I comment too much on that. The second point is escaping my mind right now, but I'll go to the Golden Boot winners. Can't see anyone for 2021, Winnie, but I can see Joran Schoenmaker, the Netherlands centre who plays for Rugby Club Eemland, won in 2020. Prior to that, 2019, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, 2018, Tommy Makinson, which was when they actually made the award only count international games. And my third point at this time has completely escaped my mind, so I do apologize for that.
That's right. I'm sure we'll come back to you. I mean, if neither of us have ever heard of the guy that won the Golden Boot in 2020, I think it tells you everything you need to know. about the validity of that award. If we go back to the team of the tournament, I have another question to throw at you because we spoke about Manu, Swali'i, Teddy. All right, Teddy's not going anywhere and he will still be the Roosters captain and first choice fullback. Now, it does seem to me that Manu and Swali'i are both pretty happy at the Roosters, but it is somewhat a shame that they don't get to be unshackled and play fullback. So I was just wondering, throw a question at you, if they could play for other clubs, who would you kind of love to see Swali'i and Manu playing for and playing fullback?
West Tigers jumped out straight away. Not that Dane Laurie is a bad fullback, but just because they wouldn't be surrounded by the best players at the Tigers, I think they'd really stand out. Other clubs,
they've got the money to throw as well. Like if I was the Tigers, I would throw the absolute bank vault at Swali'i, for example. And you probably would have money that others couldn't match.
The other component of that is Teddy has said in the past he would consider playing a different position. In the 2017 World Cup, he did play 5-8 for Italy. But, you know, he was versing like Ireland and Lebanon and nations that weren't as developed. And I don't think his best position in the NRL would be 5-8. Other players that could use them at the moment would be the Knights. As we know, Kalen Ponga is going to transition into 5-8. That will give Hastings and Ponga in the halves and a potent fullback option.
I'll throw the Warriors at you. Like if Manu could go to the Warriors, you know, they've lost Reece Walsh. I'm not sure who's going to go there tomorrow, Martin. Like that's an obvious fit there with him being a Kiwi. Again, if these guys are happy, and Manu's probably the best right center in the world too, so you can't complain with that either. So Ali, how much longer is he going to just stay on the wing for an NRL club? That's probably a good discussion for another day. All right, final kind of word on the matches that have taken place before we look ahead to the big one. We are going to talk about the final next and get a little bit of market insight from the show sponsor, Tristan.
Hello, punters. It's Tristan Merlihan here from Top Sport. We move into the last game of rugby league of the year with the World Cup final on Sunday morning between the Aussies and Samoa. Who would have thought that would be the case after they got beat by 50-odd in the first game of the event? But they've done very well, Samoa, to come back in and cause that upset against England last weekend. The market for this game, though, is very lopsided. $1.08 for Kangaroos, $7.50 Samoa, and 19.5. It shifted out from 18.5 out to a high of 20.5, and now it's come back down to 19.5 and short of the plus. So a bit of action both ways. You know, we have a position on Australia to win the event, which has been that way since it started. You know, we were pretty happy going into the tournament, laying them at the short odds, but obviously now they're into $1.08 and it looks like they'll probably get the job done. The duration of the tournament, we've found ourselves just in front at the moment. Well, I feel like that's a pretty good result considering Jacob and crew have put together a very good run with the mixed matchup over the course of the tournament. They haven't got one wrong yet, so that certainly put us back on our heels a little bit. The results of the weekend just gone. We got a little something out of the New Zealand-Australia game, but obviously if the Kiwis could have got that big upset, it would have been massive, but it wasn't to be. It was a very good game, a great game of rugby league, and so was the other game between England and Samoa, where there was a little bit of a flow through of multis onto England in the head-to-head aspect of that, so that was a handy result from our respect. So we move into the grand final. It'll be interesting, you know, are they too short to take at the dollar out the Aussies? So you'd have to expect the vast majority of the action is going to be at the line and the total. So looking forward to the game. Hopefully it's competitive. It's been a really good exhibition of international rugby league, I think, over the last month or so. So hopefully that continues into the final. And good luck if you're having a wager. As always, gamble responsibly.
Thanks, Tristan. And give him credit too, because he did give the market insight a week ago and said he thought it was a bit of a market overreaction how Samoa had flipped from being a 4-point favourite in the opening game to 8.5-point underdog last week. And it was an overreaction, as we know that game was super close. We've talked all about it. Now we're going to talk about Samoa's chances against Australia. Unless you had one other point, Clarkey, I feel like we just cut you off before that clip.
Yeah, my apologies. I thought when you said, before we move on, I thought you wanted me to give my analysis, but I just had three pros of the tournament and three cons, if you wanted me to quickly put those.
My three pros
were the fact, you know, we've still got footy on. More players have represented a wider array of countries this World Cup, which I think has been awesome. We've got a new team in the final, which I really like. But my three cons are predictable score lines. I think there's only been one outsider that's won this World Cup, or one or two. I think Lebanon against Ireland was one of those.
But if England, you count the knockouts, Samoa has won twice as an underdog. I guess England was an underdog first game. Italy, yeah. Italy did win as an underdog, but a lot of big blowouts. Yeah, is definitely a criticism.
And I think there was one other. So I think there was probably five all up where we've had the underdog win. Poor pools. I really like the one that you put forward a lot better than what the actual tournament put forward. And number three, selfishly, I'm going to say the time that the games have been on. I think that the core focus for developing rugby league at this stage should be in the Southern Hemisphere, just because the Northern Hemisphere is so much more rugby union focused. And the games just aren't at friendly times for the Pacific Oceania region.
I guess that's a tricky one. You can't suit everyone. And we want to develop the game in the Northern Hemisphere as well. And it looks like the Southern Hemisphere countries are doing okay. We've certainly got a couple of them in the final. As Tristan said, the Kangaroos are $1.08. The line is 19.5, total 45.5. And I will get your first look at this one, Clarkie. How do you see the matchup?
Probably the first one that jumps out to me is the under 45.5 there. Do you like that one? I could see a bit of a low-scoring game here. Another reason for that is the forecast is at 10 degrees, and England is typically more of a wet, dewy surface than we have on like a Sunday afternoon here in Australia, for example. Now, this is only me sort of theorizing, but that could result in a few more errors. I'd be very interested to see what the error rate has been at the World Cup in comparison to the NRL on like Sunday Arvo games in, you know, that more hot, drier weather, which allows for faster flowing footy. And if there are more errors, Winnie, then that could result in a low scoring game. So under 45.5 screams out to me from all that to start.
Yeah. And the thing is, you're going to look at a grand final and you're going to think lower total, but the total is going to be correlated to the line. So because we have a team that's nearly a 20-point favourite, that's why we've got a higher total than usual, because there is a chance Australia is going to win this by more than 20 as well. Like, Samoa is going to come in with all the emotion, all the passion, but we're going to talk about whether they've already played their grand final. And do we get, an Eels-Panthers-esque grand final where you're looking forward to a game, you're thinking, oh, you know, maybe the underdog's got a chance, and then you blink, and next thing it's 20-0 or 28-0, something like that. And then, you know, the total, which seemed high, isn't high enough. So if you're thinking low scoring, like, that's where sometimes you might look to a team total. And if you aren't sure that somehow is going to be able to hang with Australia, just doing the arithmetic in my head, like, maybe you can play Samoa under 10.5 points or something like that, like just play one team under, because my fear with the unders in this game is you need to believe that Samoa can hang in there. Otherwise, look at the game against England where they let in 6 or 7 tries late. It could be tight and low scoring, as you say, but if one team's falling off the tackles, Australia's just got too much talent. Is there anywhere across the field where you kind of think the Samoans could threaten the Kangaroos?
I mean, it would have to be through Stephen Crichton, I believe, just because, as we've said in previous iterations of this, he is a big game player. He seems to always score in these finals and, the intercept in the grand final, the intercept we saw in the semi-final there. He always seems to be a big game player. And what's important is, as well, he does have that combination with Jerome Luai, though Luai is primarily a left-side player. When he does score out to the right hand, it's kind of off the cuff, like we saw with that try against England where he runs on the last tackle. The other aspect where Samoa could win this game is through their forward pack. I think that their forward packs do match up very well with Australia, but I don't look at Samoa's forward pack and Australia's forward pack and think, oh, they're just going to roll over the top of us. I don't see that happening. But the other reason why I do offer that, Winnie, is when Tonga defeated Australia in 2017, it come off the back of their forwards really dominating Australia's, and that just didn't allow our spine to do anything.
Yeah, and I remember in that game, I guess a little bit different because it was I'm not sure if it was a one-off or if Tonga might have got one game in preparation against New Zealand the week before, but I feel like they were pretty fresh and they threw everything at Australia, and Australia was a bit off their game on that particular day and underestimated their opponent and got beaten, and well-deserved victory for Tonga, and, you know, highlight for Tonga in the history of rugby league in that country. Australia is not going to underestimate Samoa for a couple of reasons. One, you got to pay attention and respect what Samoa has done the last couple of weeks and who they've beaten. And two, because we talked about how the Samoans, if you watch the end of that game, they celebrated like they won the World Cup. And I don't blame them. Like, that was an incredible victory and you should. But naturally, it's hard to bring them, rein the emotions in and then get up again the next week. The Aussies was the complete opposite. They looked sheepish, pardon the pun, I suppose, playing against New Zealand, but they were almost in shock. They looked totally relieved to get through that win against New Zealand. Like they didn't celebrate basically at all at the end of that game. And I think that means their minds will be fully on the job. And I do think the Aussies forward pack is stronger overall and deeper. And you look at Samoa's lost players, Danny Levi left, then Farmanu Brown, I think, is going to miss the game. Spencer Lenu is playing with a bum shoulder. You let me know if there's any other player news. I'm not aware of any like injury news on the Aussie side because I do know the teams haven't been finalised yet. If there's any other news that's out there, you can share it. But Samoa has won the forward battle the last two games. They're not going to win it in this one. And in fact, Australia just keeps coming at you and gets stronger with their bench rotation. And I just think Cleary and Munster playing off the back of a pack that is going to win the battle and is going to build momentum. Ultimately, Aussies, I think, are going to open Samoa up. So I do think Kangaroos are going to win really well, to share my prediction. But the bookies haven't missed that fact. Like, you might have thought this line would be a little lower considering Samoa just won as big underdogs and Australia only beat New Zealand by 2 points. But, hey, it's nearly 20 points, as I said before. So I think the bookies are well aware that that might be what happened because, sadly, Samoa, they've already played their grand final. I think, yeah, I'd be pretty shocked if they could somehow replicate last week. And I think the Kangaroos, it will do them some good to get that scare, as I said before, and they'll be buttoned up in this one. They'll play hard for 80. And as I said, I think they win comprehensively. Do you disagree with that at all?
Well, two things to offer before I get to my official picks. The first one, in response to the Samoan lineup, the biggest takeaway, Winnie, Chanel Harris-DeVita will have to play 80 minutes at hooker as he's their only sort of anyone that can play hooker left in their lineup. He's never done that before in his career. He's never had to defend in the middle for 80 minutes. That will be very difficult for him. And the other thing I'd offer is I completely mirror what you said in regards to Australia being sheepish the week before. And I'd almost offer that Australia this week is what New Zealand were last week. When New Zealand played poor against Fiji, they come out and played well the next week. Australia are in that boat now. They played poor last week, and there's a big chance we see them come out and you know, right their wrongs in this instance. So my official predictions, I'm going to give a winner, a first try scorer, and an MVP. My winner is Australia 13 plus. I'm going to go with that. I don't know what that's paying in terms of betting, but just in terms of a prediction and a line, I think Australia 13 plus. My first try scorer, I really hate to be boring and do this, but I'm going to go Josh Adokar. I'm sure there's not many odds there. I'm sure that's not a value pick either, so I apologize there. But he almost scored first last weekend. He leads the tournament in tries for a reason.
Australia, and he did score Australia's. He did score the first try for Australia, and that was a pretty breathtaking one off a Ben Hunt midfield bomb as well that got the Aussies back in the game.
Yeah, and when you said Samoa's try was try of the tournament, I was going to interject and say, no, I think that one was because they were both amazing tries. And my prediction for MVP, Winnie, I'm going with Cameron Munster. I've gone with this because when England took control of that game against Samoa, it was their halves that took over. Originally, I was aiming at Harry Grant. I thought Ben Hunt will come on, do the dirty work. Australia's forward pack will get in the battle. And if they start to win that, then we'll see Harry Grant start doing his best work from dummy half. But I went back and reviewed the stats from their big loss to England. And when England did take over that game, it was actually their halves that really excelled. I think both halves had a try each and something like five tries just combined. So my MVP is Cameron Munster. The reason I'm selecting him out of Australia's halves is the Panthers players play with Nathan Cleary, so I think they might be able to know some of his tendencies a little bit more. Whereas we see Cameron Munster in big games in State of Origin, he is very unpredictable. He said himself after Origin games, I don't know what I'm going to do next, so I don't know how my opposition could. And so I'm going to go him with my MVP in this game.
You know what? I wasn't going to give an official play, but I feel like I should being the final game of the tournament. So now I'm kind of looking it up on the fly and I did find it. Right, this is how I play this game. And I alluded to this before. If Samoa's got any chance of staying in it, as I've said with a few other games with big lines this tournament, it's more likely they hang tough and play off emotion in the first half. And Australia, I think, will play patient and try and wear you down and play field position. So if you like Samoa, maybe play them with the first half line. But if you like Australia, and I think Australia will win this game by 20 plus, so you could play the 19.5, but I would go Australia minus 9.5 in the second half. So that's $1.88, Ladbrokes and Ned. So that would be my play If you want to follow along, obviously they all won last week, and I think I've hit high 50%. Like, I'd have to check the stats as well, but maybe 57, 58% throughout this World Cup, which you're always happy with. Anything that returns a profitable clip, you've got to be happy with. And, of course, the mixed matchups have been on fire. We don't have a mixed matchup this week because there's only one game. And they have, I want to give a little plug for maybe about 10% of the people watching right now. The Tripod is doing FIFA Soccer World Cup content as well. And we are getting these custom Top Sport mixed matchups now on the soccer. So if you enjoyed playing them through the Rugby League World Cup, I don't know if you are a soccer fan, maybe not too many league fans are big into it, but because it's such a big standalone international sporting event, you may have a bit of interest, and maybe jumping on some value bets that we find for you might add to your fun. We did also, I want to just remind people, in the very first episode of this, Clarkie, we did share the World Cup combo. Now, Australia to win at least one World Cup. Well, it wasn't the cricket, but they are $1.08 in the rugby league, so we need that to hit. England to make at least one final. If people have been following along, they are the cricket world champions, so they did one better than make the final. They won it. India to make the semis. They did make the semis. They lost to England. And a South American team to make the FIFA World Cup final. Brazil is the favourite. Argentina are second or third favourites. Big chance one of them wins it. And certainly we're close to 50-50 that at least one of them makes the final. They're on the same side of the draw. So if you jumped on that 5 weeks ago when you started this journey, Rugby League World Cup Radio with Clarkie and myself, you got $7. That's now like a 50-50. If you back the mixed matchups each week, they were $2 plus odds. Last week was, what, $3 odds? And we won by 23 points. So you've filled your pockets with our tips, and we're very proud of that. And also just it's been an absolute pleasure to work with you, Clarkie. It's been really enjoyable. I've enjoyed the tournament, and it's been really fun to just shoot the breeze each week about our favourite moments. And look ahead to the week, and we haven't got everything right, but that's all part of the fun of the cup. It's not easy to get everything right, and that's why we play the games.
No, it's been an awesome World Cup. It's been really fun to come here every week and preview, review, talk about everything footy, particularly in the off-season at a time where typically we're winding down, getting ready for the cricket season because there's not much footy in our screens. So to all the Tripod viewers, thank you very much for having me. I've really appreciated being here with you guys every Thursday. And to you, Winnie, thank you very much for the opportunity, man. I appreciate it a lot.
Thanks, mate. And I want to thank the Clarkie followers as well that tuned in each week. Hopefully I was able to add some little bits of insight here and there. And as I say, we did a World Cup preview show. That's Soccer World Cup, a big deep dive yesterday. If anyone's interested, they can find that Pod Players or Facebook or YouTube. And people who do follow the Tripod, I'm live again. I've done last night, tonight. I'm doing tomorrow night live for more FIFA World Cup stuff as well. So it's all happening. That's the next major sporting event on the horizon, but all eyes on the Rugby League World Cup, first of all, which is Sunday morning. So best of luck. If you're having a punt, always do it responsibly. Thanks again, Clarkie. And, hey, we'll see what happens in 2023, but we appreciate everyone who came along for the ride for this World Cup. Lego.